The following message is from Pastor Peter Cho of Emmanuel Community Church. More information about the ministry of Emmanuel Community Church can be found at emmanuelcommunity.org.
This morning, I want to open with a bit of a confession. I am a planner, so I think in the Myers-Briggs, it's called a judger versus a perceiver. And when I first started dating my wife, one of the things, Kim, one of the things that really impressed her was I would carry around this big leather binder that I got from work. And it had like, do you guys remember this? Before they had smartphones, like the calendar, the planner, and I had a schedule for every day, every week, every month. And she thought I was so organized. And so when we got married and went to Maui for our honeymoon, she let me plan the entire trip. And since this was our first time in Hawaii, you know, being a planner, I really wanted to make this like an awesome week and maximize our experience there. And so I put together this spreadsheet with our daily schedule. As you can see behind me, I actually saved it. This is from like almost 24 or 5 years ago. You could just pause it on YouTube if you guys ever want to access this itinerary, or feel free to call me. And as you can see, I had all of our meals very carefully planned, researched, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Planned out a fun activity in between each of those meals. And I had planned what I felt it was in my mind like the perfect honeymoon. But as you can probably guess, from the get-go, our flight was delayed. We finally got to Maui and we were on the airport shuttle bus. And I remember this grumpy American tourist was complaining loudly about something. And one of the local Hawaiian guides, she looked at him and she just said this. She said, "Relax, this is Maui," you know? And so Kim and I thought that was funny. And so to this day, when one of us gets worked up, we just go, "Relax, you know, this is Maui." You know. And I remember, you know, getting our rental car and rushing to get to our first dinner. Everything was just kind of delayed. And after parking our car, I went out to the trunk to grab my wallet and out of the trunk. But in my hurry, the trunk door just kind of bounced back on my head. You guys ever had that happen to you? It does not feel good. And I remember just like rubbing my head and just feeling so irritated, you know, because it hurt. And also my plans were already getting messed up. And I remember later that week, you know, my wife, we were following this itinerary to a T, and she kind of pulled me aside. She said, "You know, thanks so much for planning. Everything's been so great. But can we just have one day where we do nothing? We just sit by the pool." And I remember thinking, we could have just gone to Embassy Suites in Schaumburg and sat by a pool and not spent all this money. But since I wanted to be good new husband, I agreed very reluctantly. And so later that afternoon, I found myself just kind of in the pool, splashing the water by myself. And my lovely new bride is like has fallen asleep reading a book on a lounge chair poolside. And I had this idea, I want to wake her up and we're going to play together. And I thought, what if I just splash this bucket of water on her? And let me just say to all the young couples out there, yeah, don't do that. Don't ever do that. It almost ended our marriage in the first week. And to top it all off, I realized that week also I was allergic to mangoes. I got a nasty sunburn. But besides that, it was an amazing honeymoon. And I realized as a young man how I had a plan. I had my own agenda. I had a vision of what that week was going to be like. And the constant changes, the delays, the disruptions, they were tough on me. Don't worry, our marriage is in a better place now. Our last 20-year anniversary, I think I just planned 3 things for an entire week, and we just sat by the pool the rest of the time. But I share this because to me, that honeymoon is kind of like a microcosm for life. I think all of us go into each day, every week, each new year with a plan, right? Maybe some of us are more intentional, more formal about how we, you know, write it out. But generally, we all have an idea of what we want to get done, what we hope to accomplish, how we see ourselves carrying it out. And I think doing this gives us a sense of purpose, a sense of control. But life happens, right? And something delays or disrupts our plans. And it's actually hard for me to think of the last time in my life where everything I had planned for, just even a single day, went exactly according to plan. If you have kids, I think you know what I'm talking about. It could be something as small as your child running to you screaming after scraping their knee. Or if you have a teenager maybe asking you for schoolwork, to help with schoolwork after dinner when you just want to decompress. If you have older parents, it could be them asking you to come over to teach them how to fix their smartphone, or even getting that dreaded phone call in the middle of the night asking to be taken to the ER. Or maybe you're in the midst of a busy day at work and your boss sends you an email, you know, asking for your help on a project. Or a coworker quits on you right before a big deadline. Maybe it's a friend who's in the hospital or a neighbor who needs help with a meal. We plan our days and we try to stay on track. We make lists and we work to check those things off that list. But when something or someone disrupts our plan, it can take an emotional toll, right? It can feel unnerving. We often see interruptions as unwelcome setbacks because we're so focused on our own plans, our own agendas. We're so focused on our desire for control. But what if the interruptions themselves are not the problem? What if these seemingly random interruptions are the very places where God wants to meet us, and not only meet us, but to use us to bless others and to bring the kingdom of heaven near? Now, back in February of this year, I came across this quote on Instagram from a pastor named Ian Simpkins that I follow, and he wrote this. He said, "More than half of Jesus' miracles in the New Testament were interruptions. More than half of Jesus' miracles in the New Testament were interruptions." And I don't know, when I read that, something stirred in me. I think, first of all, because I was like, how come I never noticed this? You know, in all my years of church, reading the Bible. And secondly, it did something. It disturbed my spirit because it forced me to wrestle with, if this is true of Jesus, what does this mean for me in my life? Because, you know, as an executive pastor, interruptions, disruptions, they're like a constant part of my job. Putting out fires and dealing with this or that, they're just regular parts of my life. And I think that's probably true for everyone in this room. And, you know, but as I studied it more, the life of Jesus in the Gospels, even these last few months, I'd say it's not just slightly more than half, but the vast majority of Jesus' miracles and healing ministry were interruptions to whatever he was doing or wherever he was going. And I want to just highlight a few examples in the Gospels this morning. The first comes from Mark chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. It says, "A few days later, when Jesus again entered Capernaum, the people heard that he had come home. And they gathered in such large numbers that there was no room left, not even outside the door, and he preached the word to them. And some men came, bringing to him a paralyzed man, carried by four of them. And since they could not get him to Jesus because of the crowd, they made an opening in the roof above Jesus by digging through it and then lowered the mat the man was lying on." And so here we have, early on in Jesus' ministry, he's teaching inside this house when a crowded home, right? When all of a sudden a group of men lower their paralyzed friend through the roof, right? Can you imagine? You're in the middle of this, and suddenly a man just appears. It's an interruption. Instead of being annoyed, though, Jesus, what does he do? He responds with compassion. He forgives the man's sin, and he heals him. I know most of you are familiar with the story of the feeding of the 5,000. This is arguably one of Jesus' most famous miracles. But do you know what had happened immediately before? Jesus had just received word that his cousin and his dear friend, John the Baptist, had been beheaded by Herod. And this is the kind of interruption in life that none of us want, right? That will shake you to your core. And yet, when we look at Matthew 14, verses 13 through 16, it says this: when Jesus heard what had happened, that John the Baptist had been beheaded, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. And hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. And I want you to notice, even in the midst of this unwelcome interruption, Jesus is met with another one, right? And notice how he responds. He says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them, and he healed their sick. And as evening approached, the disciples came to him, and they said, this is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food. But Jesus replied, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. And of course, we know what follows. And I love this miracle because even more than, you know, in the midst of his grief and pain, Jesus didn't see the people around him as an unwanted nuisance. Instead, we learn that he's full of compassion and showing us what it is like to live a life fully rooted in God's purpose. But it wasn't just interruptions from people coming to him with their physical needs, you know, wanting a miracle. It was also seeing those that no one else saw, even against the culture, even against the wishes of his own disciples, to show them the heart of God. And in Matthew 19, it says this, the people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples, they rebuked them. They said, Jesus said, let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. And when he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there. You see, in almost every human interaction you find in the Gospels, you will find Jesus already in the middle of something. He's teaching, or he's traveling, or he's resting, or he's grieving. He's on mission. But he never acts annoyed or reacts with irritation. He doesn't say, can't you see I'm busy here? Or I'm in the middle of something. Even though his disciples often do, right, and interject. He sees, he stops, he listens, he loves. And to him, people were not disruptions or detours. They were his delight. And these are just a few snippets, but when you read through this stretch in Matthew chapter 9, I think you get a better glimpse of what just a day in the life of Jesus was like when he walked this earth. In Matthew 9, verses 18 through 38, we go through this sequence. It's quite amazing, actually. It says this, while he was saying this, a synagogue leader came and knelt before him, and he said, my daughter has just died, but come and put your hand on her, and she will live. And so Jesus got up and went with him, and so did his disciples. Just then a woman who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak. And she said to herself, if I only touch his cloak, I will be healed. And Jesus turned, and he saw her. Take heart, daughter, he said. Your faith has healed you. And the woman was healed at that moment. And when Jesus entered the synagogue leader's house and saw the noisy crowd and people playing pipes, he said, go away. The girl is not dead, but asleep. And they laughed at him. And after the crowd had been put outside, he went in and took the girl by the hand, and she got up. And news of this spread throughout all that region. And as Jesus went on from there, two blind men followed him, calling out, have mercy on us, son of David. And when he had gone indoors, the blind man came to him, and he asked them, do you believe that I'm able to do this? Yes, Lord, they replied. Then he touched their eyes, and he said, according to your faith, let it be done to you. And their sight was restored. And while they were going out, a man who was demon-possessed and could not talk was brought to Jesus. And when the demon was driven out, the man who had been mute spoke. And the crowd was amazed, and they said, nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel. But the Pharisees said, it is by the prince of demons that he drives out demons. And Jesus went throughout all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and they were helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. So here we are in Matthew 9, And Jesus is in the home of Matthew, the tax collector, and he's sharing a meal with him and his disciples. And in the midst of this dinner, his plans are rudely interrupted. First, it's a synagogue leader. According to the Gospel of Mark, his name is Jairus, who interrupts Jesus at this dinner. And he's pleading with Jesus to come and to heal his daughter. And in the midst of going to his home, he's intercepted by another woman with a bleeding problem who just wants to quietly touch his cloak and find healing from an ailment that has haunted her for 12 years. And then upon stopping to minister to her, he goes back, traveling to Jairus' home to heal his daughter. And then right after that, he's followed by two blind men crying out for mercy. And then what? Demon-possessed man. See, over and over, Jesus is stopped mid-sentence, mid-schedule, mid-journey. And it's almost comical. It's just this like nonstop parade of people interrupting Jesus with their needs, with their wants. And yet Jesus not only endures this, he embraces it. And in the midst of all this, it seems that Jesus wants to show us that the kingdom of God is not thwarted by the unplanned or the unexpected, but it is here in the interruptions where the kingdom of God is brought most near. Jesus showed us that interruptions are not distractions from ministry. Interruptions are the ministry. And people are not detours from our mission. People themselves are the mission. Jesus treated interruptions not as distractions. He treated them as divine appointments, invitations, unexpected disruptions in our own lives. He saw them as opportunities for ministry, to exercise compassion. And by living in this way, Jesus modeled for his followers a radically different way of not just living, but being with others. And unlike the rest of the world, he did not see people as a detour from where he was planning on going or a disruption from what he was already doing. He saw them for who they were, and he met them exactly where they were. And I think this is important because we tend to focus in on the teachings and the words of Christ, which are, of course, important. But I believe through the narrative we find, even in the Gospels, God is revealing himself through the person of Christ here, that Jesus was not just kind or wise. He was revealing to the world something about his very nature in and through the person of Christ and the nature of the kingdom. That the one true, all-powerful, all-knowing creator God of the universe is also a God who dignifies a bleeding woman, who feeds the hungry, who welcomes little children, who touches unclean lepers, who stops for blind beggars. This is a God who is unbothered by life's interruptions, a God who notices, who waits, who listens. This is Emmanuel, God with us. And so it kind of begs the question, how was Jesus able to do this? Jesus had a full life, but a busy life, but not a hurried life. He moved with purpose. He moved with peace rather than urgency and anxiety. And he was constantly surrounded by crowds. He was constantly teaching and healing and traveling, and everyone wanted something from him. Everyone wanted a piece of him, but he never seemed hurried or stressed or overwhelmed. So what is it that sets Jesus apart, distinct, even from his own disciples who did not seem to share the same spirit, at least before the resurrection? And so I want to just highlight a few things that we can observe which can be helpful for us. And the first is this, that Jesus prioritized time with the Father and times of rest, despite all the chaos around him. You know, Jesus often withdrew to pray, and even when all the people were just pressing on to him. In Mark chapter 1, again, early on, the very first chapter of Mark's gospel, we see this, that evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town had gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. And he also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. And then it says this, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up and he left the house and he went off to a solitary place where he prayed. And Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." And I think this is in the very first chapter in Mark, not just because it's demonstrating, you know, all the healing and all the power that Jesus has, but it's as if God is making it clear. Look at my son. Look how he takes time to rest. Look how he takes time to be with me. And this was the mark of Christ. Even in the midst of the storms, he's sleeping in a boat during that storm, and the disciples are all panicked. Jesus prioritized time with the Father, times of rest, despite the chaos around him. Second, Jesus knew his purpose, and he knew his presence was always aligned with God's greater mission. Jesus' purpose and presence was always aligned with God's greater mission. You see, Jesus made himself available to everyone who came to him, and yet he understood his mission. And he always had time for people, but he didn't allow distractions to derail him from that mission. In Luke chapter 4, again, early in Luke's gospel, it says this, verse 42, at daybreak, again, Jesus went out to a solitary place to be alone. This is where he gets his fuel. He was fully present with his Father before being fully present with others. And it says the people were looking for him, and they came to where he was. They tried to keep him from leaving them, but he said, "I must proclaim the good news of the kingdom of God to other towns also, because this is why I was sent." His time with the Father had centered him. It gave him direction, kept him on mission, because he knew his purpose. And he could say no to the things that did not align with that mission, with that purpose. If you guys came to the retreat, you know, we went over the results of all the surveys that were collected over the last couple months. And, you know, I've had some pretty long conversations with Grace Hanford, and just bless her heart. Thank you so much for all the work that she's been doing. And one of the things that we spent a couple hours just talking about is just, she's just asked me, like, you know, send me your job description. So I sent her that. We talked about it. And then she said, "Okay, tell me what you really do." Because we all know, like, the job description doesn't always line up with how we actually have to end up spending our days. And so I just went over that. And then she said something that actually brought me a lot of comfort. She said, "Okay, we're going to break this, all these things you do, down into several categories. It's going to be this. What do you do that only you can do and that you need to keep on doing? And then what do you do that other people can do that we need to delegate? And lastly, what do you do that does not need to be done because it's not aligned with our greater mission and purpose as a church?" And that, I don't know why, but that was so refreshing for me. I'm like, okay, let's work on that too, you know? Because there's so many things that I do that sometimes I wonder, like, is this really serving the greater purpose and mission of our church? And that's where I want to pour my life and my energies, my heart. I'm so grateful for Grace and her willingness to step into that, to help us with that. And so Jesus knew his purpose, and his presence was always, and he was always aligned with God's greater mission. And thirdly, Jesus was not driven by the expectation of those around him, but he trusted God's will and God's timing. Jesus was not driven by the expectations of those around him, but he trusted God's will and God's timing. You know, so much of our lives, I think, are spent. So much time and energy is wasted just living up to the expectations of people around us. Maybe oftentimes even the people that we don't even really care about. And yet, even though people had their own agendas for Jesus, even his own disciples, right? Like, here's the plan, Jesus. Let's stick to the plan. But he didn't let their urgency, their agenda, dictate his actions. You know, and I think, you know, the healing of Lazarus in John 11 is such a great example of that. You know, he ends up staying in Bethany for two more days. The time is not right. And then in John 7, he says, "My time has not yet come," even when the disciples would urge him, right, to do this or to do that, to leave these people, to leave these children, to stay on this mountain, or to bring down the thunder, or to take on the Romans. Jesus was able to look past all of the expectations of those around him and able to be fully present and be fully attuned to God's will and to God's timing. And, you know, as I've been just reflecting on this sermon, I kind of realized, like, why this has all been so uncomfortable for me, because as a planner, welcoming interruptions into your life seems so counterintuitive, right? So unnatural. When I'm disrupted by the needs of someone, my first instinct is to either ignore it, like the religious do in the parable of the Good Samaritan, or just try to resolve it as soon as possible, mostly so I can get back on track, get back on my own plan, my own schedule, my own agenda. And, you know, I debated on whether to share this, but as many of you know, this last year has been a difficult year for our family. My father-in-law, Kim's dad, he passed away last October, about 9 months ago. And, you know, of course, it was a very unwelcome interruption in our lives. And looking back, just even at the last few years, I'm just so proud of my wife, Kim, and as well as her sisters, and just how faithfully they cared for her father, for her parents. Even as long as like 10 years ago when he was first diagnosed with lung cancer. And over the last 5 years, his health just continued to deteriorate, and there was many visits to the ICU, even during COVID, when we weren't even able to visit him, and so many touch-and-go moments. And I know there are a lot of you in this room who know what it's like to care for aging parents, and it is like a relentless stream of interruptions. And they call this the sandwich generation, this season in your life, this period of time, often in your 40s and your 50s, when you're sandwiched between aging parents and yet you're still caring for your own children. And it's not easy, right? And all the demands can take a toll on you physically, spiritually, emotionally. And, you know, this year we've had to make some big decisions, some tough decisions as a family, but in the midst of it, through these interruptions, we've been forced to slow down and try to really set aside our own plans, our own agenda, so that we can be more attentive to the needs of those that God has brought into our lives. Earlier this year, back in January, Kim and I took a trip to California with her mom to spend a week with her mom's older sister and her husband. And this is a picture of us on that vacation. To be honest, this is not the vacation that I probably would have chosen. My idea of a great vacation is like finding some beautiful mountains to hike and, you know, planning breakfast, lunch, and dinner and activities in between, right? But you can't do that when you're with like three seniors, all of whom are nearly 80 years old or older. And so this vacation, I kind of felt like Morgan Freeman and Driving Miss Daisy. You know, like most of the vacation was spent driving all over Southern California, being their chauffeur, being a chaperone, taking the three of them wherever they wanted to go. We took short walks outside of their senior living community. We visited local gardens. We drove them to the beach. We spent long hours talking around a table and talking about what life was like for them growing up through a war, listening to their stories, and just watching them laugh and be like children, and just talking about how we came to faith and matters of faith. And I went into this vacation thinking I was just doing my duty as a good son-in-law. But I was actually surprised and so blessed at how much fun I had and what a blessing it was just to slow down, to learn to be fully present with people who really have nowhere to go and yet have so much to share. And being grateful for what we have, you know, even in the midst of our collective grief. And to me, you know, that short week was just a small taste of what Jesus is inviting all of us into, this unhurried life that can not only be a ministry to others, but where we can be ministered to as we follow the example of Christ. And I know going on vacations and taking a week off, that's not always feasible for many of us. So what can we do to make the kingdom reality more real in our own lives? I think there's a few things we can do to help us be more intentional about this. And so I want to close with just a few practical applications. How can we be more like Jesus in the busyness of this world? One, make room for others by creating margins. we need to make room and create margins where there is none. Most of us in today's day and age, we have so many demands placed upon us, and much of it is actually self-inflicted, isn't it? It's our kids' sports, it's our activities, it's our involvement in this and that. We live at like 110% capacity, and we have no margins in our lives to be fully present, even with those around us that we love, let alone with God himself. But like Jesus, withdrawing to pray, intentionally building space into your life, emotionally, physically, spiritually, learning to care for your body and your soul, to be available first to the Lord so that we can be physically and emotionally and spiritually available and present for others. So important. And it's interesting to me that the story of Jesus' life opens with his parents, right, before he's even born in Bethlehem, and they cannot find a room, even though Jesus is about to arrive. And you begin to see how Jesus enters this world, the brokenness of this world. There's no room anywhere for anything. And how Jesus presents a different way. And how he calls his followers to follow that way, to live in that way, to make room, to be present. You know, the famous Christmas carol, "Joy to the World," responds by saying, "Let every heart prepare him room." And I think that is the invitation of the gospel. As we let our hearts and we make room for the Lord in our hearts, we are then able to make room for others, to create margins, to be available, to be present. And it makes me wonder, how are we dictated by so many of the commitments in our lives that we're literally unable to be attuned to the needs of others? How can we create space emotionally, financially, in our calendars for this purpose? Second application is to be fully present with others. To be fully present with others. I'm really bad at this. My wife is great at it. If you guys know Kim, like, she has this way of just being able to make you feel like you're the most important person in the world when she's talking to you. And yet, being fully present with God, and then you'll be able to be fully present for others. Commit to being fully present with people, even when they interrupt your life. Put away your phone. Pause that task you're working on. Listen with compassion. Love is best demonstrated in these ways. And sometimes the best ministry is just showing up with undistracted presence, an undivided heart. And so be fully present with others. And lastly, application, see interruptions, not as interruptions, but see interruptions as invitations. Invitations. You know, when life happens, instead of reacting with frustration, when something disrupts our plans or our schedule, ask the Lord, "What are you doing here, God? What is it that you're trying to show me or teach me? How do you want to use me in this situation?" And if we're really struggling, maybe we can even pray, "Lord, help me to see this person and this interruption as you do." I remember like my first or second year as a pastor, I remember getting this text, like, there was this emergency situation from someone in the church. I'm not going to name their names, but this family had encountered this really difficult situation. Apparently, there was a dead animal on the driveway of this person's home, and their husband had already gone to work, and so this woman, who's a member of a church, was very distressed, and she could not even walk to her car because there was this dead animal in her driveway, and she was texting my wife, Kim, like, "I don't know what to do." So she didn't ask for my help, but I just felt like maybe I should go and stop by and do something about this. And I went to her house, and it was like this little, I was going to show a picture of it, but it was actually the fetus of a squirrel that was just on her driveway. And she was so grossed out by it. She was like paralyzed, couldn't do anything that she wanted to do for that day. And I remember just, you know, getting rid of the squirrel and taking it and throwing it in the garbage and sending her a nice picture of it afterwards, which she appreciated. But I remember, and I didn't even remember this, but going back and looking at my old text this week, I pulled up that text, and she had sent me that text later that night, and she said, "Tonight, I prayed that I was thankful for friends who can help us in our time of need by removing dead animals from our driveway. And the kids could not contain their laughter, but I was serious. So thankful. And it was such a small interruption, right? I mean, I just went to her house on the way to work, removed the dead animal. And yet, it was such a blessing to see how you can bless another person in such a small way. And even like about a week or two ago, I got this call from someone around 4 o'clock, and she got a flat tire, and she needed help replacing it. Her husband was not available. She's working in the city. And so, again, I just drove over there, and to be honest, I was really busy. I had like 2 hours before a Bible study that I hadn't even prepared for. And so I was like, this is not a good time. But of course, I was willing to help. I wanted to help. And so we went there. I went to the parking lot of this grocery store, near this grocery store, and I hadn't changed a flat tire in so long. And yet it was such a blessing for me because, you know, her teenage kids were there, and I got to show her son, like, how to change a flat tire and all the things that I wanted to do with my own boys. And I never got the opportunity to. I was able to do there. And it was such a blessing, you know, even though at the time it was an interruption for my day. It wasn't what I had planned. And yet, I think God will do these things, big and small ways. He will bring people into your life, interruptions into your life, opportunities to be a servant, to be a blessing, to be available, to be present to someone who has a need, and to serve them, and to bring the kingdom near. You know, Proverbs 16:9 says this, "In their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps." We make plans every day of where we want to be, what we want to do, what we want to accomplish. But God will always be the one who guides us in where we actually go. He establishes our steps. And the question is, will we surrender ourselves to his guiding, to his will, to his purpose, to his presence, so that we can be present for others? Let's bow our heads together and invite the worship team to come. As we enter into a time of communion, as a people who worship a living God, a sovereign God, we know in our hearts, but sometimes we forget in our minds, that God is the orchestrator of all things, that he knows the end from the beginning, that there are really no interruptions, no surprises for an all-knowing God. And so we can not just see God in that way, we can see the world in the same way as we serve this God. We can see interruptions not as unwelcome distractions or disruptions to our life, to our schedule, but as we can see interruptions as divine invitations to bring the kingdom near, maybe to someone who feels like God is distant, God is far. And so the most important thing that you can do perhaps this week might not even be on your calendar right now. It might be the conversation you didn't expect, or maybe even a conversation that someone has already asked you to enter into. Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe it's a family member or a friend. Maybe it's someone who's texted you in the midst of a crisis, who needs something more than just a rushed reply. And so in this time and in this space, before we enter into a time of communion, can we just make space now for the Lord, to make room in our hearts for the people that God has disrupted and interrupted into your life right now, right here, that we see as a nuisance, that we may see as a distraction, that we may see as a detour from what we want. Can we ask God for the faith to be able to be like Jesus, to be his hands and feet, to walk by faith and in His Spirit, to see every circumstance, every interruption as a divine appointment in which you are now on mission and God has commissioned you to be His hands and feet. Can we just take a moment and reflect upon that? Let the Lord speak to you, your spirit, His Spirit into your spirit.